Welcome back to CMU Booked, Carnegie Mellon's official book podcast. I'm Sam.
Hi, Bunny.
Hi, Bunny.
I'm Hannah.
And this week we are going over Bunny by Mona Awad, very famous online. And we're super excited to talk about it. Enjoy, team.
Well, Bunny, we gotta talk about our cultural consumption of the week as a starter.
Yes. I have some really niche picks for my cultural consumption of the week. My starter is gonna be that guy on TikTok who does the Hugh Jackman singing.
Oh my God. It's,
No, I
but
I mean, what?
No, there's no.
It's so good.
It's so funny to me. I'm crying laughing right now thinking about it. My music consumption for the week has been mostly the Moana soundtrack. So if I could give you a little, I am the daughter of the village chief. I don't know the rest of the lyrics. Anyway, sorry. I just, so what about you, Bunny?
I've seen Moana once, Bunny. I gotta admit.
So I know what we're doing tonight.
Okay. This week I watched the miniseries on Netflix about the Long Island serial killer. Wow. I have been obsessed with the Long Island serial killer before they found Rex Humerman, who is the culprit. I was obsessed with it, and I watched Lost Girls, recommended it to you.
Watched it, wrote a paper on it.
Yes. And then a couple years ago, they finally found him, and this series came out, and it's just crazy. I mean, he killed so many women. Also, Long Island police are evil. Anyway, but I did that, and I've been obsessed. We're going down the TikTok route. There's this girl named Reagan. I'm sure some people will know her who listen, but she does a lot of fitness, but also just like, her life is amazing. She parties so much. How? I'm like, how do you work out after doing what you do through the week? But anyway, really into her. She's hot. I don't know. She's like a pretty person. It's nice to look at pretty
people.
It's
like, you know, when you're like, I just want to be you. And so I'm going to like your posts. And eventually, if I like enough posts, I will become you. You know, that feeling?
What a great segue into this book. If I get enough likes, maybe I'll finally, you know, be validated.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And liking pretty things.
Bunny, I'm so excited. And I wanted to ask, who was your favorite bunny? Which one did you connect with the most?
Well, the four, right? There's Cupcake, who's Caroline. Mm-hmm. I need to do this each time.
Oh, yeah.
I was actually talking to myself out loud at the end of the book. My boyfriend was like, what are you saying? And I was like, oh, no, I'm talking to myself.
There's so many nicknames.
Like, Kira is Creepy Doll.
Yep.
And the Duchess is Eleanor. And Victoria is Vignette.
Boom.
But it's also like a teacher's lion, a teacher's bear, and then Fosco is their supervisor.
But her real name is Ursula.
Yeah, it's hard to keep track, but my favorite would probably be Caroline.
Mine too.
Oh, period.
Wait. She gives me, okay, my favorite mean girl in the movie Mean Girls is Gretchen.
Plastics.
Yeah, my favorite of the plastics, which is essentially the bunnies in this world. Gretchen is my favorite because I just like empathize with the way that the only way she's valuable is through acts of service and being just like the right-hand man to Regina, or in this case, the Duchess.
Yeah.
And I thought that was cool. I also, near the end where she like dyes her hair purple because she's going insane. Why is she your favorite?
The purple bob.
Yep.
The purple bob. I liked that. I also... like, right, her sort of unraveling is about this validation, which I thought I could connect with more than some of the other bunnies. Like, Creepy Doll, I found her, when she's unraveling, to be abrasive and resentful in a way that mirrors Victoria Vignette's more, who I did not like as a character. I wanted to like her really badly. And then in that sequence towards the end of the novel where they're all sort of in shambles after Max has sort of like fucked with them. And in that, I thought they were all very unlikable except for Caroline.
Yeah.
I felt like she got the most out of what their, you know, dark magic was doing. I felt like she was the most well-rounded out of them.
I like the fact that you said that you did not like Vignette. I feel like she was off in the background for a lot of it. And I was confused about the addition of her as a character because I feel like she served a lot of the same purposes of Samantha once Samantha has become the bunny. And even at the beginning, when I started reading this book, I wasn't fully sure that Samantha would ever actually become one of the bunnies. And so I thought that vignette was sort of supposed to represent what would have been of her, like this like symbolic character of what Samantha could have been if she decided to become a bunny. So yeah. Then once she did, I was like, I don't really know what the purpose of vignette is.
Yeah, I know. Well, she's sort of this representative device of like, they indoctrinate people, but it's not clear cut the type of person that they indoctrinate. It's sort of the vulnerability that they're looking for. And I thought it was interesting, like vignette was like, right, like a very three-dimensional character. There was one line where Samantha was like, I was bored when I first met her because she just wanted to talk about Pilates. And so it's like there are pieces, but throughout their sort of enmeshed relationship, I feel like they pick up more of each other. And so she gets more like them and more like them. You see sort of how vignette has immersed herself in the world. Although I was sort of confused by how abrasive she and horny she continued to be, even in the bunny circles, like the private circles, where they're all just like, oh, bunny, you're so beautiful. Can I be you, bunny?
Yeah. You know? I was also confused about that because I feel like the rest of them mesh so well and share a brain. And I mean, that's kind of the idea, is that they're like one amorphous being with 10 eyes. It's a line that they come back to a lot. I feel like I could still see who she was. So I was confused as to if she's so strong-willed to the point where you can still kind of see who she was before becoming a bunny, then why is she a bunny?
Well, I think it's saying that any type of person can be indoctrinated into something like this. Like, we're all vulnerable, you know, and not to be like the most annoying person in the world, but like statistically speaking, the people who join cults and are indoctrinated into them are people in their 20s who are passionate, smart, driven, and just want to have a purpose in the world. Like, that is the archetype. They're looking for a way to make an impact. And then these people say, here, I know how you can do that. And in this sense, the Duchess, Eleanor, is like, I can help you on your artistic journey and your, you know, journey as a woman, you know, all of these very flowery and amorphous theory, you know, that I think appeals to people and gives them a purpose and answers. And when you're a 23-year-old woman, no matter if you come off as self-assured or not, like, you're probably pretty self-conscious. And that can be taken advantage of.
You note a little bit about the idea of, like, an artistic journey, which I think is really interesting in this specific, like, setting. I just want to talk about setting a little bit. Like, why is it at this really elite institution? And why is she writing? You know, do you have any opinion on that?
Well, you know, I'll say something about Warren itself, which is the university name. I just actually looked this up. Warren is a word for, like, interconnected rabbit holes, how they run underground. Isn't that crazy?
Wait,
there's so much of that in this book. I loved reading it because I'm familiar with the sort of, like, I'm from Fairfield County, and it's like this, you know, New Haven, which I think they're modeling this after, like a Yale type school. I mean, they even reference like Ivy, this these wealthy schools, and Ivies are placed in very low SES communities, impoverished communities. And so you have this sort of shiny thing in the middle of a community that is not supported by organizations like this. You're like, New Haven is super unsafe as a city, but Yale and Yale's campus is beautiful, you know? And so I think it's this sort of double-edged sword that we're getting with the bunnies itself, that the setting also reflects.
And I was confused for a little bit as to why they kept on bringing up the don't walk home alone, you could get killed, whatever. I was confused because I was waiting for that to become a plot point, but I think you're right in that it's supposed to be more symbolic of finding a safe haven. The bunnies have become a safe haven, even on campus on Warren, for Samantha. And it also reminded me of, like, Secret History, like, not to be that bitch, but, like, I was like, this is the elite New England institution where people are insane.
This reminded me of Ninth House in the sense that, like, right, that takes place at Yale and it's all about dark magic and, like, really dark and, like, vulgar and supernatural things. And it's so wonderful to read for me because I like that contrast, that sort of hidden underbelly, which also noir does. That's all what noir is about. And I think that that's what she's describing here, which is a reflection of universities like Carnegie Mellon, like Johns Hopkins in the middle of Baltimore, like surrounded by like the projects, and the school does nothing to support those communities. Samantha in this book really struggles with that, and she struggles with the sort of farcical outside versus what the authenticity is, like what the original thing is. I thought the academic style itself and sort of the academic language used in the book is also the commentary she's trying to make about performance and perspective. And I can't remember, she actually talks about specific terms that become sort of like, they're not effective because they're just used constantly.
I totally agree. She says the body. When people continuously refer to these like specific concepts, these like abstract concepts, I thought that the critique that she's making of the way that these workshops are kind of like all smoke and mirrors is really, really relevant, and that they're trying to point out like, oh, we're just kind of like validating each other on these little things that are so amorphous and hard to grasp that it almost doesn't make any sense.
English departments especially, but I think, you know, the humanities as a whole, we're not judged the same way STEM people are. If you get the question right or wrong on a chemistry test, like, you're right or you're wrong. But in English departments, it's subjective. If you write a story and they don't like it, then you're getting a bad grade. Like, you run that risk. I go over to professors' houses for dinners. You know what I mean? There's this sort of interpersonal connection that makes you emotionally reliant on these people and, right, seek their validation. And I think the idea of, right, a trauma, like trauma porn and a trauma contest of when their professor has them over for Christmas and, like, she just wants their sob stories. Like, she just wants to feel like a savior among them. I think that in the humanities, the competition extends to emotional factors and personal factors instead of the way that they do in a STEM context.
Absolutely. And it gets messy in real life and in this book. And I think that that's what makes it such a good setting for a story like this, which is so insane to take place. But speaking on where you're connecting these girls to, like, real life people, I was going to ask, like, do you know these girls?
I think every woman who reads this book knows these girls.
Yeah.
It's like hard to read sometimes because you're like, dear Lord, I didn't even think about what those words meant and the, you know, the manipulation behind them, the way that I'm sort of being gaslit, but then I'm gaslighting myself. Like, it's this cycle of just denial, self, you know, self-effacing things along with, you know, pity and self-blame. You know, she's stuck in the middle. Her brain is literally stuck in the middle.
No, that's so true. And talking about the antithesis, like, it's just the in-group versus out-group of it all. Because at the beginning of the book, she's talking about these girls and how they're hugging. Oh my God, Bunny, I missed you so much. Never leave me again, Bunny. We've just all been there. You know, when you're in a class and you don't know anyone and everyone is having the time of their fucking lives. But the second you're included, when you're in a different class and you're with your friends and you're doing that, everyone else just like falls away to you. So it's so easy to understand what they're getting at with these girls.
There's one thing I wanted to read this excerpt because I wrote like a guide of what I think their manipulative tactics are. So this is after they're all talking about their old aspirations when they're trying to pick a boy to make or a bunny to turn into a boy or a draft, a darling.
Yeah, I like that best.
Kill your little darlings, which means kill your drafts, throw out your drafts.
Right. I thought that was such...
It's crazy.
Such a good reference.
Anyway, so this is on page 129 of the paperback, and it says, more nose wrinkles. Tsk, tsk. Reinforcing old narratives, Bunny. Bunny, it's so great you were a failed actress once, and that you still want everything to be a scene that is just so. Probably you were so amazing, even though they said you weren't pretty or thin enough, no matter how much you threw up. But Bunny, what did they know? We think you are so, so beautiful. Still, you're not on the stage anymore, Bunny. You have to think bigger, wilder, please. I read that and I was like, oh my God. People have said those sorts of things, especially doing stage stuff, like doing musical theater and getting a compliment that is just absolutely not a compliment. Oh, it's really great that you tried that out. You know, I wouldn't have the courage to do something like that. I love how you'll just make any decisions on stage. Bunny, Bunny, it's so great that you did that. There's a reassurance, then there's a passive aggression, then there's a slight demean, then there's flattery, and then there's a command. So you get this sort of overarching rules and numbered guide that I feel like they do a lot after workshopping things or disagreeing with one another. They'll just sort of passive aggressively demean one another, but then say, but I'm here for you. You know, right. You can trust me. We share the same pain. Nothing is individual. It's us.
Each of these characters, specifically Eleanor, the Duchess, is so good at finding what specifically each of the bunnies are insecure about. I know for Samantha, I think she is insecure about her own agency. They bring up a few times, especially when she's like tied up and gagged and the bunny creations are torturing her, essentially. Mm-hmm. They're like, Samantha, you have no agency. Samantha, your character is so passive. Mm-hmm. Like, speaking as though she's writing her own destiny. That's her biggest insecurity, and that's what they're playing off of. Viewing her life as her own work of art and viewing herself as the passive female protagonist.
Samantha is different from them in the sense that, right, like, the Duchess, her authority is really important to her, and she takes a lot of pride in, you know, keeping people in line and knowing them and being able to discern what their weaknesses are and how she can exploit them. I think Victoria seeks company and sex. I think she's horny, and I think she thinks it's better to be accompanied by a group than not. And I don't know, Creepy Doll, it's hard to say.
Yeah, Creepy Doll is also a wild card to me. I can't tell if it's because she's so like passive and kind of in the background, or I don't know what it is that she wants. It'd be more of Creepy Doll, because I could visualize her. I love the way that they describe her. Mm-hmm. With this like red hair curled, and I could totally see her, but she always has these like wide eyes and is staring at you. But I didn't know what she wanted.
But I think we're not entirely supposed to know. Mm-hmm. Because they're so enmeshed.
Yeah.
And one in the same. You know, we say this, we think this. The first time that started in part two of this novel, I was like, oh my God. Oh, now we're cooking. I was like, I was excited before and now I'm in. And I was sort of shocked at how quickly she was indoctrinated. But then we sort of go into this section in which the collective thinking and crazy amount of cognitive dissonance is implemented in her brain, and then she is not able to escape it until the end. I feel like this encompasses a lot of what her relationship with the bunnies are. The hate is bubbling up in my soul, and yet I am pinned there by the terrible fear that they will cast me out for good. And this is page 164.
I mean, like, we all know what it feels like to finally get a group of friends after you've been lonely for so long and be like, I would do anything to stay with these people. I just fell for her in part two. It just becomes infinitely more confusing kind of as the book goes on, and especially in part three, schizophrenia, question mark. It's like, I don't actually know what's happening. But I was thinking to myself as I read that line that this must be exactly what all of the other bunnies are feeling, including Eleanor, the Duchess. You know, all they want is kind of to be included. I guess the Duchess a little bit more wants to include or not include. I feel like it follows this linear track of this is what Samantha is doing and this is how she's becoming involved with the bunnies. And this must be just like their everyday, like every time they bring in a new member, this is the track that they're going on.
It's hard to know why exactly they chose her, right? I mean, yes, she's in the same class as them, but is it a question of, and I mean, then we get into whether or not we should take this book literally or take it metaphorically in the way that I think she probably intended. I think the fact that the bunnies use bunnies is important, and she has a stag and a swan.
Yep.
And I think that sort of works in the vein of what you're talking about.
The bunnies are passive and they're cute and they're not alarming. And so I guess when you're choosing these different animals for Samantha, you're saying that she is more of a threat. That's why they even invited her into the bunnies, is because they were like, she's stronger than us. She's more of a threat than the bunnies were because they're so passive. We need to get Samantha in on this because if not, she's somebody who could ruin all of it for us.
Why do you think she's capable of creating fully formed individuals? And
with genitals.
Yes. And also not harming said animals. Like, in order for the boys to stop being the way that they are, like, they gotta kill them. But, like, the stag who Max is made from doesn't die. And Ava obviously is murdered, but she didn't have to die.
I think that the bunnies have the intention of, well, they're borny, they're bored and they're horny, and they want a guy who will go on dates with them and fuck them and then, like, leave. And that's all they want. Samantha wants something more, especially the fact that they're referencing her art so much. And hopefully the idea is that she has this, like, bigger passion that she's waiting for, especially because she's the only one out of the bunnies that isn't, like, rich. I think for Samantha, it's a little bit more serious. And so she has these serious passions that she wants to accomplish, because Max is kind of born out of everything that Samantha loves and hates. So I'd like to think that all of her loves and hates in the world are just stronger than the other characters.
Yeah.
And that's why he comes out fully formed, because she has more, like, clay to build out of.
Max and Ava, the theme that you're covering, like Janice and Damien to Samantha, who is Katie, which the first thing, Katie Heron, you know, is obviously connected to this, as is Heather's. And I think that, right, like, people wanting to belong, people with other passions. But the first time they described Ava, I was like, this is Janice Ian.
Ooh.
I was like, this is literally Janice Ian. Like, this is very much, like, that, taken from that character. But I also, I wanted to reference sort of the culty aspects that I think are really important to the book. 165, there's a line that says, you know, there don't have to be words sometimes. And then they say, we'd know exactly what it is you were feeling. Like, you don't even need to speak because we can speak for you. Like, when they're in workshop and Eleanor the Duchess starts answering the question before, you know, Samantha can even open her mouth. And, like, I don't know, what sort of characters and women generally do you think can connect with that? And, like, what does Samantha as a character represent, like, to you?
The first one that pops into my head, like you were saying, is Katie Heron. Because I was thinking about Mean Girls a lot when I was reading this book, but also Richard in The Secret History. And I was thinking about this, specifically the parallels of when she goes back to her terrible, unsafe apartment and she's having these, like, fever dreams. And she is dreaming of like all of the amazing things that could be happening if Ava were there. There's almost a exact copy of this scene in The Secret History when Richard is in his terrible apartment and the ceiling is broken and there's like snow coming in and he's freezing cold.
Yeah.
And also having these fever dreams. I was appreciating the fact that we have a female character of this sort of like archetype of like the not so rich person who goes to this really elite institution and is just like indoctrinated and doing their best to fit in, but obviously it's futile because they'll never be what they grew up so long not being.
And sex in the sense of like, right, like yeah. They're them being female, but then also sex as the physical act. Yeah. And because that is what they are so obsessed with. I mean, they're making boys and all they want is to conquer how to make them have a penis.
Yeah.
Like that is definitely important to them.
Ooh.
And how is that different from the sort of things... The dancing that is like an act of love for Samantha. I want to talk about how maybe this represents something for women in society.
Yeah, I guess we're supposed to see the bunnies as more of this like symbolic version of what femininity looks like from the outside. When we see Samantha genuinely love Ava, care about her in a way that the bunnies just will never care about another human being, I think that that goes back to what makes Samantha different from the bunnies.
They're performing femininity in a way that Samantha isn't, but it's the idea of them needing to be with you know, a man and them needing to break these artistic boundaries as women that drive them to these, you know, great lengths.
Mm-hmm.
And Samantha is fully in the bunny mindset and runs into Ava. They walk past a homeless man on the street and they are like, don't look at him, don't look at him. That's an owie. It makes you think deeper and harder. I was like, underline, makes you think deeper and harder. It's all, they're only scratching the surface, the bunnies. Mm. It's all an idea. That's why they are so brutal, I think. And that's why she made this such a, you know, violent novel, because there is violence. It's just silent in our normal days. I think she's just trying to say, this is what's under it. This is the passion that lies beneath those interactions and desires.
And I wanted to ask you on that note about the dichotomy between the infantilization of these, the like cuteness factor of the bunnies versus the fact that they're so sexual and that's like what they want most. So like how is that resonating with you?
Resonated as the death of Coquette. The death of Coquette and the extremism of this sort of babyish.
Yep.
Quite honestly, bullshit that women have gotten into and that social media especially and porn
yep.
has absolutely destroyed for everyone, not just men, everyone.
Yeah.
You know, like the idea of what a woman is supposed to be is what they're acting. And Samantha fundamentally doesn't understand that. And I think we also get a glimpse of that when she fully explains her the interaction that ended her relationship with her thesis advisor, the lion, where she says, like, I spilled all my words out on his floor. And like, he just sat there. It's like, I also think, like, that's not what a lady is supposed to do. But in another sense, we can talk about the mental health aspect of all of this.
But on that point of Samantha also, the scene with Rob Valencia, where they die on stage, and she's trying to explain how sexy this is to the other bunnies. And they're, when did you have sex with him? And she's like, no, we didn't have sex. We just died on stage. But eventually she gives in and just says, he took me to the woods and ravaged my body.
There's a literal interpretation of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the other interpretation, which is you have schizophrenia. I wrote down on a page, what is real? And then I said, no way Ava's real. This chick's crazy. So I definitely was pushing
yep.
for the schizophrenia route. Also because the scene in which she's on the bus and sees the woman with the spider on her neck, and then she's like, now the woman's talking to me. And she's reading a thing that says, do I have schizophrenia? So she's reading a packet that says, do I have schizophrenia, and saying that I have all of these symptoms.
One of the reasons that Samantha comes to the school is because they're like, you're so interesting. And it's indicative of the way that mental illness is kind of glorified in the creative arts, especially in the fact that Jonah, this other character, has like done drugs and he has mental issues, and they're like, but he's the best poet, so, you know, what can you do about it? So I think a lot of the specialness factor of Samantha and why they want her is because she's nuts.
It's a minority, you know, contest. Yep. It's like, that's who they want. They want people with the biggest, you know, hardships, issues, past problems, family trauma. Like, it's a trauma contest. Yeah. And speaking of Jonah, who I love.
Love.
This last, page 305, last page of the novel. You could come with me, I say to Jonah, if you want. I lower my gaze to the mud. Sure, Samantha, says the mud. I'd love to. Girl, what? Girl, the mud's talking to you?
Wait, no way.
I was like, no way. But I also think in academic terms with the schizophrenia, is that why, like, when she spilled all of her words out on the floor, is that why her thesis advisor was like, I need to pull away from her?
Well,
like,
yes.
She's doing pretty poorly.
Yeah. I'm not saying that she doesn't have good work. We don't really see any of it. But the second that it becomes a problem for someone else, when Samantha enters her thesis advisor's home and brings those problems with her, that's when it's no longer like, we love you for your work and we want you to be at this institution. That's when it's like, you're kind of a problem. So I think that is also one of the big, you know, turning mm-hmm. points as to why she becomes a bunny, is because obviously she has these problems and that makes her stronger and different, but it also makes her, like I said, an issue that they would have to deal with if they don't indoctrinate her.
And they exploit her the same way that other people do. That is, if they're real. Dylan pointed out, like, after she is exposed to this pamphlet, that's when things change. That's the shift after. The reader changes gears. But, like, do these situations take place? Like, is she even over at the bunny's house? Do the bunnies bully her? Or does she isolate herself?
She says there's that one guy.
The flasher,
who stands outside her apartment all the time. And I'm like, and she never interacts with him. She says that Abel one time smokes a cigarette with him. And I'm like, that did not happen.
Well, and she's always talking to herself. Yeah. Even Jonah's like, I talk to myself sometimes. And she has that whole dialogue with Ava in her head when Ava's not around. In talking about what's real and what's not and sort of what the inner dialogue is, I mean, I sort of think it doesn't really matter. I think that she leaves that question open to you. It can mean something if you want it to, but it can also mean something and the book still function the way that it does. I wanted to talk about the violence.
Yes.
Which I kept underlining. Every single time she describes someone, she talks about wanting to hurt them or eat them or something along those lines. Bite deeply into her white shoulder. Dig a fork in her cheek. And then we hear that as a child, when she was writing, everything was super violent and the teachers called in her mom and things like that. All of her art now is very dark. Schizophrenia doesn't mean that you're having violent thoughts inherently. I think it's an interesting choice to have the violence of that and then the violence of the bunnies that they inflict onto these boys, if that is happening.
A lot of the violence I noticed has to do with, like, capital C consumption, even with the boys or the darlings. When they become boys, they just want to, like, eat all of the clothes and corsages on the girls. The cultish nature of all of it and Samantha wanting desperately to create something good of herself and her work, I feel like you have to, like, consume the people around you to become, like, a stronger person, like, consume them and their talents. And that's what the cult is kind of doing, is they're, like, just bringing in people around them to consume. Yeah, they're taking parts of them. And like she said, like, they become an amorphous being with 10 eyes. And so it's about, like, owning and consuming all these people. And that's what I made of a lot of the violence.
We feel this.
Yeah.
We are Bunny. Like, we are Groot. We are Groot AF. I'm sorry. I love Groot. If I talk about that, I would not be happy. Why is ooze everywhere?
Ooze?
ooze on people, ooze on the fireplace, oh. Ooze on the boys, muffin mix on all of the boys. What? Why? Why these? Why does she repeat these things?
Capital O ooze. It's like losing something. If you ooze something, you lose control of it. And so I think they're afraid of, like, Samantha, like, oozing out of their little blob.
It's the runoff.
Yeah.
It's sort of the thing, like, the evidence to a certain extent.
That's great.
I feel like the evidence of reality and you not being attached to it. And, like, there is evidence, but you're not picking up on it. It's also like the black gloves. It's like, that was representing something so early. Yeah. Circled it each time I saw it. The ooze. And then what's the other? The muffin mix.
Yeah.
They all smell like muffins.
And grass.
Yes, and grass. And yeah. They're all, and they smell like animals. Everyone is an animal. I'm in a fucked up fairy tale. I am getting like lion, tigers, and bears. Oh my.
Yeah.
We have a lion and a bear as professors. Mm-hmm. We have bunnies. She's sort of an Alice on acid.
And they reference that multiple times.
Yeah, she says, he was my white rabbit and I followed him home.
Yeah.
I thought for a second she was going to, at the end of the novel, we were just going to have cleaner, like, and I, you know, and this is her book.
I'm happy they didn't do that because mm-hmm. I would have thought it would have been a little bit cliche.
Yeah.
I was explaining this entire story to my roommate, Quinn, shout out. I tried to explain the ending and she was like, what?
Not again. I'm being like so pretentious and annoying, but it's like yeah. The neorealism. It started this way and it's ending the exact same way, mm-hmm. except that Samantha can write again. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like we had this journey and like we're left with the same thing that we started with. This is the same education that that's going to carry on. Right. It's like that ooze. The ooze is that there's probably going to be another bunch of bunnies. It's like the end of Mean Girls.
I was just going to say that.
It's like the end of Mean Girls where three new girls walk in hot and all strutting their stuff. What did you make of her returning to the spot where her and Ava first met?
I like the fact that she goes to that spot. So proving that she's going to the exact same place where the story started, but she's changed her circumstances is, I think, very effective in that part of Samantha's journey.
She feels that the world is finally full of opportunities for her. She says she saw in her a wondrous world, an open hand, a person I knew in my bones would be someone I'd love. And it's like, that certain unconditional love, she finally understands that's different. Mm. That's different than validating love and this collective love.
Yeah.
And also when she talks about Jonah knowing that the guys who he's waving at aren't really friends with him, and he says maybe he knows and he just doesn't give a fuck.
Right.
It's like she needs to reconnect with that part of herself, and she does.
Bunny, I am so glad we read this book, and I wanted to know what would you rate it? Because I, last night, went on Goodreads immediately and gave it 5 stars.
If you had been like, rate this right now, I would have given it 5 stars. I think I'm going to give it, just because I want to save my 5 stars for like the greatest thing I've ever read.
Okay.
I would give this a 4.75.
Totally
so
fair.
It's a cop out. I would give this 5 stars.
Yay!
If we were on Letterboxd or Goodreads, I would give it 5 stars. I definitely would recommend this to basically every person I know.
Yeah. This one's for all my mean girls.
Shout out. From high school, you bitch. You should read this.
Can I shout out to the girls that voted me out of their lunch table senior year of high school? This one's for you.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone, for our CMU question of the week. It's going to be, what is the craziest thing you have seen this semester so far?
I was walking the other day and I saw my good friend Czar in a banana suit. And I was like, Czar, what are you doing?
Wait, the guy we just walked past?
No, that was Mo.
Oh, okay.
Shout out Mo. Czar was like, I don't know, I found this at Goodwill. So there's like no explanation and I found it very funny. Hannah, what about you?
That's a good find.
I know.
If I saw that at Goodwill, I would also buy it. That's the sort of thing you see and you're like, well, I can't leave it.
Well, someone else is going to get it.
That's like my Winterfell t-shirt.
I love Game of Thrones.
So the weirdest thing I have seen on campus this semester so far is definitely the flash mob that I saw on the first day of school to a Flo Rida song. There was a soul person doing a dance, and then, as you can imagine, in flash mob fashion, it expanded. There is a reel posted to the Carnegie Mellon Instagram, and you can see me in the background, arms crossed, holding a book.
Remember to follow us on Instagram at CMU Booked. Reach out if you want to be a guest, pitch us books, find us anywhere, throw books at us. We're super excited.
Gates Prima. I'll never be there. Ween Prima. That's where you'll find me.
I'll be at Gates. All right. Bye, bunnies.
Bye.